They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Jower, ladies and gentlemen, my name's shush, Nathan. It's not your turn to talk yet. My name's Elliot Mogulyines. I'm here with my brother, the grumbling voice you just heard, Nathan Mogulyines, and we are the Magellans at the Movies. We are a movie reviewing podcast. A couple years ago, Nathan and I were just chatting about movies, and we decided to record it and put it on the internet, and that's how movie reviewing podcasts were born. And we're just really proud of the way that people have taken our idea and run with it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nathan. That's a great contribution from Nathan right there.
I mean, I was going to say, like, even some of them inventing time travel to take our contribution to the past, that was cool of them as well.
I know. That's how successful our idea was. Our invention was the mother of inventions. Yeah. More inventions. Anyway, Nathan, I was not planning on talking about this. I was not planning on talking about the still of Matt Damon as Odysseus from Nolan's movie. Because I saw it, I was like, yep, there it is. And then the controversy started. Oh my gosh. Can you believe it, Nathan? The gall, the absolute, words fail me, the arrogance of the costume designers to put Odysseus in a, it's so funny, a Corinthian helmet 400 years before that was invented. Oh my gosh. Do the filmmakers think that we're stupid? I mean, seriously. Obviously, I'm being facetious. I didn't even realize this was a thing until I read an article about the still, and it was like, oh, why people are being upset about this still? And I was like, really? And I looked into it, and like, yeah, there's an actual, it's not substantial, but there are people who are super up in arms over the inaccuracy of Odysseus's costume. And I just gotta say, if they think that's historically inaccurate, what are they going to think of the Cyclops?
Yeah,
they're going to storm out of the theater and be like, do you have any idea what is in this documentary about ancient Greek military equipment? There are flipping Cyclopes. Not only were there no Cyclopes in Greece at this time, they don't even exist. I want my money back.
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous. I saw people criticizing the costume for being very, like, generically Roman without,
this is Greece.
Whatever. Generically, like, ancient Rome, Greek. You know, you think these costume designers know the difference? They used a Corinthian headdress, Elliot.
Oh my gosh, that's true. I can't believe it.
But I saw someone specifically say, like, in the Iliad, they describe Odysseus's helmet, and they were like, why didn't they use the description from the Iliad? And I was like, here's the more important truth. Christopher Nolan doesn't think Homer is the same person who wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. He's one of those people. This is what I think is not being talked about. They're talking about the inaccuracy of the costume. The inaccuracy of the costume shows that Christopher Nolan doesn't think Homer wrote the Iliad, or he doesn't think Homer wrote the Odyssey. I think that's what needs to be discussed.
I mean, it's very difficult to determine, obviously, with any kind of certainty. I mean, obviously, I've made it pretty clear that I think that this is a complete non-issue. Like, I saw this, and I recognize, I was like, oh yeah, that's that helmet that people always have in Greek movies, even though it's a lot younger than a lot of ancient Greek stories, a lot of movies. It's anachronistic. I saw that it was anachronistic, but like, it's a depiction of a fairly ubiquitous Greek iconography.
Yeah.
And much more importantly, again, like, this is not a documentary. What does it matter about the helmet?
I think the more interesting thing for me is that this image does firstly confirm that Matt Damon is playing Odysseus, which I assumed from the get-go. But I think I'm really still very interested to know who the rest of this gigantic flipping cast that Nolan has assembled is playing. Because I think there's some safe assumptions, like Tom Holland is most likely playing Telemachus, or I don't know, you know, I'm going to butcher the names here, playing Odysseus' son. Most likely Anne Hathaway is playing Penelope. Given that Zendaya was rumored to be more of a cameo, I'm assuming she's either playing, like, Circe, or if he's adapting all of the Odyssey, she's playing that one princess who Odysseus meets briefly before he continues on to his thing. I think that's what I'm more interested in. I hope they keep doing images of the cast and using that as a means to reveal who these people are playing in the cast, because that's what I'm most interested in. Is Robert Pattinson playing Zeus? You know, these are the questions I want answers to.
It's interesting. Because recently they released The Return, right? And that's another adaptation of the Odyssey, or part of it. And I don't know, Ralph Fiennes and, oh gosh, I can't remember the actress's name. The Return. Juliette Binoche, yes. Mm. Those are two, like, I don't know why. Maybe I'm being a little unfair to people like Matt Damon and Anne Hathaway, but those are two actors that I think that when I hear their names in those roles, I'm like, yes, that makes sense. That's a pair of very serious, very talented, very mature actors. And maybe it's just my inherent bias for old things that I'm like, oh, old things are better. But I don't know. It's just, but we'll see. Like I said, Nolan has made some out there casting choices in the past. Most famously being, of course, Heath Ledger, who was not a popular pick for Joker. But it worked out really well, so I've still got faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that's all I have to say about one still image that's most likely not even going to be in the film.
Maybe it's not even supposed to be a still. It's just like Matt Damon in a candid moment and someone happened to take a picture of him.
I believe that. I mean, you know, I don't want to flex the fact that I've read The Odyssey too much, but I have read The Odyssey. I'm kind of, you know, better than everyone else for doing this. The odds of Matt Damon wearing this costume for the majority of this movie is like zero. Like, most of this movie, Odysseus is not going to be wearing his helmet.
He's not going to be wearing a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Matt Damon has reached the point in his career where he's ready to do full frontal nudity. Okay. Or maybe not. Right. Maybe Nolan isn't at that point in his career.
That would be crazy for him to go from, like, what, 8 PG-13 movies in a row to one R-rated to full frontal? That would be crazy.
I don't know. Anyway, we shouldn't waste too much time talking about this. Before we move on, just a bit of personal news. I wanted to say that there is a new review up on the blog for The Brutalist.
Oh.
This is a huge movie in more ways than one that's out right now, or I think it may have like just left theaters, but I saw it. I wrote a review for it. You should read it and be enlightened. Anyway, speaking of Matt Damon, Nathan, let's I almost said dive in, but I'm not gonna do it.
Good job.
Let's get started. That's so much better. We are here to review movies. That's what we do. Nathan, you chose this. You chose this, Nathan, on your own head, be it. So why don't you introduce us to this little flick called Ford v. Ferrari. Tell us what it's all about.
Yeah, I chose Ford v. Ferrari. This is a James Mangold movie from 2019. It's about the attempt by the Ford Motor Company to design a car and get a racing team together to win the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which is, I guess, is one of the most historic races in the world. And so he's the Ford company is trying to beat Ferrari, which has historically been the team to beat at this thing. And it follows, more specifically, it follows Ken Miles and Carroll Shelby, played by Christian Bale and Matt Damon, as they are kind of, or at least in the film, are presented as the two major forces behind this effort, in terms of Carroll Shelby being the kind of designer of the car, as well as the one who owns the company that's designing the car, and Ken Miles being the racer who is actually racing the car. There's not a lot else to the plot, I would say. It's about them trying to win a race. I mean, we're all familiar with these sorts of things. It was nominated for a whole host of awards back in 2019, including Best Picture and a bunch of other things. I watched it when it came out. I actually saw this movie in theaters, and it really surprised me. And then every time I've gone back to watch it, I think I've enjoyed it more. And just recently, I had a friend tell me that, like, they had watched it for the first time, and they were like, man, isn't this movie fantastic? And I was like, you're so right, it is fantastic. And it's tangentially connected to current news, because James Mangold currently has another movie nominated for Best Picture that he's trying to win awards for, being the Bob Dylan biopic, A Complete Unknown. So I thought, what better time to revisit this movie, see if I continue to enjoy it as much as I have, and get a chance to discuss, Elliot, your thoughts on it. So what's your experience with this movie? Because I don't think you saw this with me in theaters. I want to say I saw it with another friend of mine.
I did see this in theaters. I don't know if it was with you or not. Oh. But I did see this in theaters. I enjoyed it as well. I've always enjoyed it. I've always talked about enjoying it.
Nice.
I've only seen it a couple times, though. This is definitely the first time in a while. Mm. And I gotta say, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I thought it was very entertaining. Very, very fast-paced. Got some great performances in there. The music is done by Marco Beltrami, who did the music for Scream. So that's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have to say, I thought it was a little superficial and a little confused at times in terms of, like, what it's about, quote-unquote, about in a deeper sense, if indeed it's about anything. But I was surprised that you were wanting to review this, Nathan, because I had always, like I said, I always enjoyed it, but I had also always looked on it as just kind of like, it's one of those easy breezy dad movies that you throw on the TV when there's nothing else to watch. Maybe it's a late night, you're not really up for anything super demanding, so you're like, I just want the movie equivalent of, like, of fast food is harsher than what I'm thinking, but like a Pizza Hut pizza. Mm. Like, yeah, that's what I'm here for. So yeah, but of course I am always willing to be convinced that it's something else, something more. There's some things that I genuinely, like, am going to need your help understanding, because I could not tell what the movie was going for. And yeah, I'm interested to talk about it. Do you want to do your first impressions, or should we just dive in? Oh, shoot, I just said dive in.
Oh, good job. What did I see? It's harder than you would think. I don't feel like I need to say my first impressions. I think I'd love to just jump off some of the things that you've already said. Yeah, see, I've got synonyms coming at every which way. Because you, as you said, it is a bit of a dad movie. And let me just get this out of the way right now. There's a non-zero chance, right, between now and when I die that I might become a dad. So I'm not going to deny the fact that a lot of what you said is true, right? This movie is not Schindler's List. It's not Mad Max Fury Road, although I would put them in similar buckets in terms of the... I think that's a really good... I would put them in very similar buckets in terms of it is a simple story made incredibly, incredibly well. And I think another thing that contributes to my enjoyment of this movie is my low expectations when I first saw it. That when I went to this movie in theaters, I was kind of the opinion that it was going to be mediocre to bad, because I was expecting it to be like a very rah-rah America, like, you know, Ford v. Ferrari, like, oh, let's stick it to those stupid Italians who think they can make cars better and faster than us. Like, we're America, we're better at everything. So I think the movie being having just this primary message of, in my view, of being about two guys who, like, don't just love doing something, but feel a genuine need to do something, and the environment in which they're trying to do that in is not conducive to being able to do it, that at every turn Ford is trying to prevent Ken from driving the car and is trying to throw wrenches and over-commercialize this thing that these two guys just really love doing. And so I think that really surprised me, and I think that surprise maybe elevated the movie above where it would have been otherwise. But I still, I think rewatching it this time, I'm just blown away. Maybe not blown away is maybe a little bit extreme, but I think I just really enjoy the performances. I really like the dialogue in a lot of the scenes. I love how simple so many of the lines are, that they're just like statements of fact, and that really just tickles my brain somehow, that I just really enjoy listening to people say, like, here's the facts or whatever. An example of that is like when when the Shelby Corporation has been bought by Ford Motor Company, and he's giving a bit of a speech, and at the end of the speech he says, "My name's Carroll Shelby, I build race cars." And I'm just like, gosh, I love that line. It's like the We Rob Banks line from Bonnie and Clyde, that it's just like so simple that it really, it's very enjoyable to me. And so I think all of these things come together to make a movie that I both really enjoy watching, as well as really enjoy seeing all of the great editing, great cinematography, great performances, great music that's going into making the story. I mean, it might be a Pizza Hut pizza, but the teenager who made this Pizza Hut pizza is, like, gonna be a master chef someday. He did a great job with it. It's when you get a Little Caesar's pizza, and sometimes they aren't that good because it's, you know, a $7 pizza, so when is it gonna be? But then sometimes they put some extra sauce into it, and it hits all the right notes, and I think that's this movie, is they really cooked up something with the secret sauce.
I actually think that, in general, Little Caesar's pizzas are too... they have too much sauce. I wish they would kind of walk it back a little bit.
I think this is the second time... you did this before we started recording, where you take my, like, beautiful poetic metaphor and you interpret it literally to be like, no, but actually...
beautiful and poetic seems like a stretch, as does your appraisal of this movie, if I'm being honest. Boy. I'm afraid, disagree a little bit, that I think I would describe this movie as a simple premise well executed. I wouldn't say that it's, like, very, very well executed. I think that a lot of what holds it back is the standard ingredients. I guess we're just going to take this pizza metaphor all the way to the end credits.
Good.
The standard pepperoni, the standard mozzarella, the standard marinara sauce, standard crust, all of its standard, recognizable, good, but not great. Hmm. Because there were a lot of times in this movie where I was like, oh, this is that scene from all the biopics and the movies about people doing great things. This is the scene where the idea is introduced and the person who it's being introduced to at first is like, what? But that's impossible. That simply can't be done. There's the scene where it all comes crashing down and Ken is being denied his chance to do what he needs to do. And it's the sad part. And then they turn it around. Oh my gosh. And they manage to bring it back. And then there's the initial problems. Oh, it's not working out so far. This unorthodox Hail Mary pass is just not working. And then, oh wait, but wait, no, here it comes. It's coming back. We're doing it. Yay. And it ends on a fair, and it all ends on a fairly, again, like standard saccharine note of like, yep, we did it. We're the best. Believe in yourself. Do the right thing. Just like get as many cliches as you can get on there. And that's not, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. And it makes for a good movie, but a movie that I was like, man, I just wish that this was constructed with a little bit more originality. Like, this is so recognizable. This is such a this kind of movie that I was just really wanting something more from the formula. Even though I again enjoyed it, I enjoyed large parts of it. Mainly for the performances and for the fact that it's just got a talented team of people working on it, from the music to the cinematography to the costume design, all of it. So, yeah, I mean, I will never in my life speak an ill word against a classic Pizza Hut pepperoni pizza. But if you ask me to like give my honest opinion on it, I'm not gonna sit here and say that this is the best food that you could possibly get, or even this is the best pizza that you could possibly get, and you're in for something truly special if you've never had it before.
Wow, I mean, this is one of those hard. It's always difficult when you hear someone, you know, describe a movie that you really like and they don't really like, because it's, I just don't see at all how you could be coming to some of those conclusions. I mean, I guess it has some of those. Well, and see, maybe this is the reason, is I can see some of these scenes that you're describing, right? That there is a moment where Ken suggests using like some other thing, and some guy is like, oh, can't, like, is that even gonna work? And he's like, well, if we do, like, what if we do this thing? And but I feel like the movie isn't making a point of that. The point of the movie is not like, wasn't Ken Miles like a genius? I take the point of the movie to be like, didn't Ken Miles love racing? And so I think maybe it's just like a focus thing, where like my focus was on all of these scenes where we can see, like, the scene where Ken takes his son out, and they're like kind of sitting in the road, and it's just after Golden. I feel like I've never seen, maybe I shouldn't, maybe it would be, we'd argue less if I use less hyperbolic statements. But it's shot at a very interesting time of day that I don't feel like I see very often, that makes it already very visually interesting to me. And Ken just talks to his son about, like, this crack here is where, like, I do this thing for the turn. And then he waxes very poetically about, like, you know, there's a perfect lap out there. Like, this thing that I'm trying to do can be done perfectly, and that's what I would love to do. And I guess I can kind of see why, how that might fall into biopic cliches, but I feel like I very rarely see biopics that really draw out the sense that the subject of it really loves what they're doing. I mean, I don't think there's like Bohemian Rhapsody in no way communicates to me how Freddie Mercury feels about his music or what is special about his music or even some other, like, I like Rocket Man. I don't think Rocket Man really communicates anything interesting about Elton John and his relationship to his music or why he does music. It seems to just be like, yeah, he's a genius and he does music because he's, like, good at it. Whereas this movie feels very much like it's bringing to the forefront this idea that Ken Miles is good at racing and Carroll Shelby is good at racing and understands racing. But the reason they do it isn't just because they're good at it. It's because they love doing it. I mean, we get that right from the beginning when Ken Miles is introduced. I want to say it's his first scene where he's in the shop and he's explaining to this guy, like, hey, you're using this car incorrectly. You don't understand this thing to the level that I understand it. And I can't explain to you, like, the depth of this thing. And I feel like that is what really attracts me to this movie and makes me really enjoy it. And I don't see that I don't see that as being something that's a staple of a ton of biopics.
Well, Nathan, you've successfully put me, like, right into your shoes, because now I feel the exact same way, where I'm like, how am I supposed to respond to that? Like,
well, we can
the scene was shot in early evening. That's nice, I guess.
Well, I just meant that it looks nice. I think the crux of what I'm saying is, I think what the movie is choosing to highlight in its real life subjects is not what I always see being highlighted in biopics. And I see it being highlighted in a very effective and moving way compared to other ones that maybe try to communicate it but do it very poorly.
Well, I don't know. This just seems like standard issue biopic stuff for me. And I actually thought that that scene, the one that you're talking about, I actually thought that scene was pretty hackneyed, because it's just such a movie thing to do, to just, apropos of nothing, take your son out onto the track and just expound your philosophy of your hobby in extreme detail. I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, it's just not natural. And I don't know, you just, Nathan, you can never, never give the movie grace, all right? You have to, the movie is your enemy. You have to always be on your guard, demanding that it justify itself, that it explain itself. Give no mercy, no quarter. You have to hate the movie, and it needs to convince you that it's good, all right? That's where you need to be.
That sounds like a really miserable way to watch movies, in my opinion.
Oh, if you think that's bad, just wait until you hear what I have to say about meeting new people.
Oh, boy. I would like to maybe pivot. I don't want to spend the entire time debating the ethos of the or the pathos of the movie or whatever. I do want to talk about the actual...
I think that's pronounced pathos.
Whatever, bro. Okay. Sorry. I can see Sorry. Why you hate meeting new people.
Well, maybe new people just hate meeting me, because I always say, I think it's pronounced pathos, and they're like, oh, you're one of those.
Yeah. I would like to, like, actually talk about the things that are present in the movie. I think something that we've already talked positively about, that hopefully we agree on, is the main performances of Christian Bale and Matt Damon. I think Christian Bale does an incredible job. He's always kind of a transformative actor in terms of he really does a lot to embody the role that he has taken on in the film, and I think this movie is no exception to that. I think he does an amazing job embodying Ken Miles. And like I said, while some of the scenes that to some people might seem a little hackneyed and forced, I think Christian Bale manages to really sell. And then Matt Damon, I would not call Matt Damon a transformative actor. he kind of plays versions of Matt Damon in all of these movies, but I think he does a really fantastic job as well. And I really think, especially in the tail end of the movie, when he's kind of carrying the brunt of a fairly emotional sort of ending, I think he does a really good job of nailing a lot of those moments. And I think a lot of the supporting cast does a good job too. I like the guy who plays Henry Ford, whose, you know, name I'm not going to be able to recall, but I think he does a good job of, again, Ford makes a lot of overblown sort of speeches, and I think he does a really good job of selling that Henry Ford Jr. sincerely believes that going to war with Ferrari is just as noble and meaningful a cause as helping America win the Second World War. I think he does a really good job with that. And then other characters like Ken Miles's wife does a really good job, and Ken Miles's kid. Not every child actor is very good. I fully believed that this kid was very invested in hearing his dad's philosophy of his thing, because when we see him in other scenes, he's, you know, he is also developing a love for this thing, just like his dad has a love for this thing, which I think is pretty believable. I mean, I love political science because of how often dad, you know, sat me down and talked about his philosophy with regards to it.
Somewhere out there is the perfect political system. I'm just trying to find it.
That's really,
I mean, funny. That's just like a noble pursuit.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think all of the acting is really fantastic, and might, you know, make up for some of these perceived. I don't really find those scenes very hackneyed. I'm very. If Elliot is too harsh on movies, I give them way too much grace. And every time they show me something, I'm like, yeah, that seems legit. That seems realistic. That could happen. He sits to be out of. It's possible. I just saw it filmed.
Yeah, it has to be happening. It has to be able to happen. It's happening on screen right now.
Exactly.
Gosh, you're so stupid, Nathan. Well, I agree. I think that, first of all, Tracy Letts is the guy who plays Henry Ford II.
Nice.
Noah Jupe as the son. Noah Jupe, of course, being the son in A Quiet Place. So,
he is. Wow.
Yeah. That's nice. I will talk about this probably a little bit later, but I was thoroughly unimpressed with Henry Ford in this movie. I thought he was pathetic. like, the whole... His whole thing of, like, his prickled ego launches this whole thing. I'm like, dude, man up, all right? Come on. Grow a spine. But we can talk about that later. No, I think that the beating heart of this movie, the thing that makes it work, is both the performances of Christian Bale and Matt Damon and the chemistry that they have on screen. Yeah. I loved their characters' interactions. Every time they were having a conversation, I was there. I was completely sold. The movie convinced me. Yeah, even separately, I thought that they were great. They were two really strong characters. They played so well off of each other. I loved Ken Miles and his sense of humor, his like childlike joy. I really liked when he first is driving the race car and is like, "More of that, please, my girl, more of that." I mean, that kind of stuff is just really charming. And also, it's said in a Brummy accent, which I couldn't even begin to replicate for you here. I also liked Carroll Shelby for his more pragmatic but still passionate approach, and him sort of being the mediator between Ken and the suits, the darn suits. John Bernthal, every time I see him in a role where he's not playing like a haunted military man, I'm reminded like, whoa, John Bernthal actually has range. Like, dang, he was really good in this. playing the, like, slightly stiff, awkward exec, who's also more sympathetic towards Carol and Ken and, like, their side. I was just always happy to see him. And I was a little sad when Lee Iacocca kind of faded out of the movie, because I was like, oh, man, bring John Bernthal back. I just want to say again, I liked this movie, okay? I did. I enjoyed it. And I think that this is the reason why, that these performances and these the writing of their characters and their interactions, those were the times, and there are plentiful times where, I mean, they're the main characters. So those are the times where I was most like, oh, yes, please, this is the good stuff. More of that, please, more of that. That's what I was thinking.
Good one. I mean, obviously I agree with all of that. And I think beyond that, and, you know, maybe this is where we're going to get to disagreements a little bit. I think the movie is really well shot. I think it looks really fantastic. The one shot in, I think it's in Daytona, where you can see, like, the other cars in the reflection of Ken's goggles. That's a sick shot. That is just so cool. And I already mentioned the one scene at, like, dusk, I think looks really neat, just because it's lit really, like, I don't know what to say.
What are you talking about?
It looks good. Well, and it's hard to do, too, that, like, I've seen a lot of people talking about how fake and terrible the final sequence in Captain America: Brave New World looks. That just, like, in the trailers, right? The sequence where they're in the cherry trees looks awful and fake and, like, the dumbest looking soundstage you've ever seen. And so I think some people don't realize until they see it done really poorly that it's really hard to get lighting right. Because I think the issue is lighting, because it's not, the cherry trees aren't green screen. They're a real cherry trees. It just, the movie is lit terribly and looks awful. And so I think scenes like this where it's at dusk, but it's lit in such a way that it still looks good and clear, and it doesn't look like they did some day for night stuff, I think is really neat. And, you know, I really enjoy. And I think in general, I just really enjoyed the way the movie was shot. It's not like the most, it's not Nickel Boys, where it's like the most innovative use of the camera I've ever seen, but the movie looks good. And I think the movie did a really good job of one of my usual metrics of, is this movie being really intentional with its use of cameras, is when they do shot reverse shot, where it's just a conversation between two people. And it's easy to just go like, yeah, we're just going to do over the shoulder, over the other guy's shoulder, back, forth, blah, blah, blah. And in this movie, they don't just do that. There's one scene early in the movie where Ken and Carol are talking, and at a pivotal point in the conversation where Carol reveals kind of new information that hooks Ken's attention a little more, the shot changes because the conversation has changed, because they want you, the audience, to know that, like, pay attention a little more here, like, something has happened that's worthy of note. And so, you know, that to me is a good metric of, right, they're not just setting up the camera and doing whatever. They've got some ideas behind it. They've got some intention behind it, which I really appreciate seeing. And again, the shots of the races, those are just sick. And again, that's why this is a dad movie, because I'm not really even into racing. I see some car, you know, blow up, and I'm like, dude, that's dope. I should start watching NASCAR or something. I'm not going.
Good Lord, you vulture of human misery.
He survived.
Why would you find that cool?
He survived. Come on, you're telling
the
me...
The first one.
You're telling me people don't go to hockey matches to see people punch each other? There's no way, bro. There's
yeah,
no
and
way.
Those people are vultures of human misery.
Well, you know, give me a bald head and a bone to pick at, and I'll be a vulture. I'm just kidding. It's sick because it's a movie and no one's getting hurt. That's why I wouldn't actually watch that star.
Backpedaling. Nathan's backpedaling. I do agree, actually. I'm not sure why you expected me to disagree. I think this movie's well shot, except for the thing about the dust. I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, if that's just the bare minimum for a scene to be lit so it doesn't look like a Marvel movie.
Well, looks good too. It doesn't just look not bad. It looks good.
It looks fine.
Well, you just don't understand lightning like I do, Elliot.
Well, that may be the case. Maybe that's the case. But, like, you know, oh gosh, I said, you know. I'm saying so many things that I need to not be saying. Pretty soon I'm going to start swearing. But like we said, like we say very often on this program, you can only review the movie based on your own experience of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not saying that Nathan is wrong. That was his experience of it, but my experience of it was different. But no, I do think the movie's very well shot, and I liked the shots. It was funny. It actually got me thinking in the racing sequences about other good, like, car sequences, and I was like, man, the Batman has, like, one of the best car chases we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
Probably since this movie, because, well, I mean, there's a lot of movies I haven't seen, so maybe it's just in there. But I thought that the racing scenes were really good. Some of the highlights for me were, when it comes to car chases, what I really want, and I don't think this is unique, I think this is pretty much what everyone wants, is a real sense of speed. Mm. They don't want just, like, shots inside the vehicle, or that can clearly be sped up, or shots that are clearly sped up, CGI stuff. They want that real speed that you get in, like, Top Gun Maverick when you see the actual jets. It's just more tactile, more visceral. And this movie has a really good understanding of it. And also, yeah, Ken just looks really cool in his sunglasses and racing uniform. I also liked how... This is another very movie biopic thing to do, is that the driver for Ferrari, for no reason, is portrayed as, like, just an absolute scumbag. Like, he looks like he's planning a series of vicious murders at all times. And I was like, why are we doing this? Is this guy a terrible person? Do we have any reason to think that, like, what if he looks like he's planning a series of murders, but in his head he's thinking, like, oh man, I hope I can just make my dying father proud here and do well for myself and for my country. But in the movie, it's silly is what it is. It's just silly that their competitor looks like a flipping sociopath. But I thought that was funny. I think the movie looks very nice. Even when it's set at dusk, I'm like, yeah, wow, dusk. Can't believe it. Never seen it before.
I didn't mean to make this a whole thing. I just thought it looked neat. Suddenly I had to defend it.
Well, because you said that you had never seen anything like it before.
Like,
movies rarely film at this time of day, which I don't even know if that's true.
I don't know. It felt novel to me, and I've seen a lot of movies. Maybe my memory is just bad. Anyway, I think I have two other kind of points here that I want to talk about in terms of, I've already kind of mentioned that, to my mind, the movie is most compelling because it's about, right, Carol Shelby and Ken Miles love racing and love doing this thing. And so when, I don't know, I'm not in a field where, like I enjoy doing what I'm doing, but I'm not, like, gonna wax poetic about it to my child someday at dusk.
Yeah, Nathan's a crossing guard.
So I don't necessarily know why I connect as much with this thing, but there's just something about Ken's passion for his thing and Carol Shelby's kind of thwarted passion, because he raced up until the point that his doctor said you can't, that I find very compelling. That final, not final, but that moment after the 24 hours at Le Mans where Ken says, you promised me the race, not the win, after he kind of gets his ability to win is stolen from him by the suits. I just find that really compelling. So the two things that I wanted to highlight here that I found very interesting this time watching it is I found Shelby not standing up for Ken the first time Ford didn't want him to race. And then they go to this race and Ford just gets absolutely destroyed. I found that moving into then Shelby, right, not just standing up for Ken, but risking his entire company for Ken, where he tells Henry Ford, like, hey, let Ken do this race, and if he wins, let him race the 24 hours, and if he loses, you can have my company. I've just found that very compelling, in a way where it didn't feel like the movie was beating me over the head with, like, look at the change in this character, and it felt like a very natural progression of, you know, he didn't stand up for his friend, and it went bad for him, both, like, professionally, as well as, like, it hurt him to see Ken hurt like that, and so then he flipped. I don't know. That's the kind of stuff that I really love in movies. And then also, I really like the end of the movie, where, firstly, the movie does a really fantastic job of kind of tricking you into thinking everything is fine, because earlier in the movie, they set up this idea that sometimes when people crash, the issue is if they don't get out fast enough, they suffocate due to the smoke. The problem isn't the fire, the problem is the smoke. And then when they do the 24 hours of Le Mans, they have to, like, use a mallet to mallet the door shut at some point. And I was watching this with my fiance, and when they malleted the door shut, she was like, Nathan, I'm going to kill you if Ken died. Like, Ken dies here. This movie thinks it's smart, but it's not smart. But really, the movie is smart, and she was the one who was dumb, because the movie...
Whoa.
I'm just kidding. She's a very wildly intelligent
person. Oh my gosh. Backpedaling again!
Hey, I've never seen a position I won't backpedal from, Elliot.
I guess.
But it's just really clever on the movie's part, because it does trick you into thinking that its foreshadowing setup has then had a fake payoff, and you're like, oh, we're fine. And then you get the coda where Ken does die in a crash, and I love structural stuff like that in movies. But then I think it's also really moving then to see Carol Shelby deal with this, and I loved the line where he goes to see the son and he's trying to put into words what Ken meant to him, or like put into some words about, like, this is what I thought about your dad. And the son just says, hey, he was your friend. I think that's really amazing. And again, it works because their chemistry and the performances have been so fantastic up to this point. I just find it really moving. And I don't know. It gets me. It gets me. What can I say? Okay.
Well, I found it moving. I wouldn't say I found it really moving. but I agree. I think that that's all well done. And I liked the parts of this movie that were about, I agree that the movie is about passion and pursuing your passions, despite the problems that other people are kind of throwing up against you. And it's here where we need to, I need your help, Nathan. Nathan, you are my only hope. What is this movie's stance on Henry Ford? Because I understand that BB, his vice president, is like an antagonist, right?
Yeah.
He's trying to obstruct things. But Ford, I never really got the sense that, like, does the movie realize that this guy is kind of pathetic? That because his poor little feelings got hurt, he's pouring millions of dollars of money into winning this race, and he doesn't know anything about the cars, doesn't know anything about racing. When he gets taken racing, he kind of, like, dissolves into tears and starts talking about his Nazi grandfather. Sorry, but it's true. And I was like, so I was thinking, this is extremely unimpressive to me. Like, this guy is just kind of a loser. But I couldn't tell if the movie felt that way, because, like, in the scene where he decides, where he gets the report that Ferrari said some mean things about him, and he's like, oh, now I'm gonna declare war on Ferrari. That scene didn't really felt like it was constructed in such a way where you were supposed to feel where you were supposed to feel like, oh, wow, this guy could stand to stiffen up a little bit, to get a bit of a spine. And also, like, the scene where he, where Shelby takes him on a little drive, when he was crying and all that stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is so lame. And I just couldn't tell if the movie was trying to make me feel that way, if it wasn't trying to make me feel any way at all, or if I felt that way, like, despite what the movie was trying to get me to feel about Henry Ford and his role in this. So I'm very curious to hear what your evaluation of him was.
I think some of the things with Henry Ford are just the movie communicating the facts that it needs to in order to propel the plot along, right? Like the Ferrari insulting him, leading to him wanting to beat them. I don't think that's necessarily trying to say anything about Henry Ford. I think that's just communicating the facts of this is why Ford is pursuing the goal that they're pursuing, that, right, the plot hinges on. But I do think in terms of some of these other scenes, I think, I don't know, if you look at the movie as being about people who are passionate about something kind of having their passion and their ability to do it stifled by commercialization or just people who are trying to monetize that in a way that they don't really care about, right, the passions of the people underneath them. I think Ford represents, like, the other side of the coin. Right, that, like you mentioned, BB is an actively malevolent force. Like, he doesn't like Ken Miles, and so he's actively trying to hinder Ken Miles's pursuit of his passion. Ford's issue is that Ford could not care less. And so I thought one of the best examples of this is when, right, everyone is at the 24 Hours to Le Mans, and Ford is there at the beginning. And then he gets in a helicopter to go fly away to have a nice Italian dinner. And the crew even kind of mentioned that they're like, hey, where's he off to? And the guy's like, yeah, probably somewhere nice. Like, we're stuck here, right? We're doing the job. We're doing the thing that we care about. And the fat cat gets to go, you know, eat pasta somewhere. So I think, I don't know if the movie necessarily wants you to feel a certain way about Henry Ford. Certainly the movie does not portray a particularly compelling or inspiring image of Henry Ford. Like you mentioned, he's bawling like a baby the one time he gets into one of these cars. But I do think in terms of the movie being about people with passion, having that passion sucked down of them, I think Henry Ford represents another method by which that happens. I saw one person interpreting the movie, and, you know, I think I've mentioned before that I'm not big on movies purely as metaphors, but talking about James Mangold making the movie as someone also in an industry where, like, some producer who doesn't know Jack comes down and tells, actually, this is kind of relevant to, like, current things that, Elliot, did you see this, that Maya Hawke was giving an interview?
Where are we going now? Holy cow.
She was giving an interview where she said that she had been told by producers and, like, casting directors that some movies are given an Instagram follower quotient, that in order for the movie to be profitable, the sum total of Instagram followers for the cast needs to be above a certain number. And so some people don't get cast because they, right, like, aren't active on Instagram or don't have enough followers, where it's like, we want to cast this unknown because they're really talented. And the producer says, well, if you cast this unknown, you have to cast The Rock in another role to get your Instagram follower count. So I think James Mangold, my point is, the story of I'm trying to be creative and somebody who doesn't care about creativity or genuine art is ruining my ability to do that, I think that is a very resonant idea, especially for people in the movie industry. And so I think Henry Ford represents one of those people, right? That he doesn't care about the thing. He's just there to make sure the red line goes up. And so he doesn't care if Ken Miles, who loves racing, gets to win a race that he deserves to win because he built the car and raced in such a way that he deserves to win. He just cares about three Fords coming through, and wouldn't that be a nice picture? So I think that's Ford's kind of a purpose in the story somewhat.
Wow, that's quite a lot. I think you're probably right. I think you're right about all that, and I just missed it or didn't see it. Or was just blinded by my inherent distaste for the Ford family.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing about My Hawk, that sounds stupid enough to be true.
Well, and her dad also, like,
sorry, Scorsese, you can have Andrew Garfield as Jesus, but we're gonna need John Cena as Pontius Pilate in that case.
Do you see that Scorsese's got a new movie? Like, The Rock is in his next movie? I don't know.
How many movies does he have in the pipeline?
Well, I guess this is the one that he's actually going to be shooting next. It's like a crime movie set on Hawaii or something. And The Rock is going to be playing some crime person. Wow. Going back to that old well. Scorsese, I mean, and crime.
That is insane. Like, what a get for The Rock.
I mean, we're way off course, so I want to come back to, I'm ready to do my rating after this, because I don't really have any negatives besides, like, sometimes the wife is kind of a thin character, and sometimes the scene is just to propel the plot, and so it's not as interesting as the stuff with Ken and Carol. Anyway, The Rock is going to have a killer next couple of years, because he's also got, he's in, the Safdie brothers next movie, as like they showed the image of him as like a wrestler or something. I think it's a biopic about his dad. I don't know. Don't take anything that I'm saying as truth.
But Dwayne the Boulder Johnson.
He's in another very artsy movie where he's upset that people keep saying he can't act and that he's a stupid, you know, talentless hack. So now he's coming to show him what's what, but we'll see. Anyway, for this movie, I'll flip it to you, Elliot.
that sounds a little harsh. Like, I've never loved The Rock, but I've always felt like he gets a lot of hate for what seems to be just kind of a,
he's making bad movies.
Yeah, but lots of people make bad movies, and Zack Snyder makes bad movies. I don't think he's a bad person.
He
may be talentless, but I don't think he's a rotter.
Whatever. All right, well, are you ready to do your rating, Elliot?
Yeah. I like this movie. I swear I did. I think that this movie is funny. I watched it with my mother, by the way.
Oh yeah, what were her thoughts?
She loved it. Loved it. She thought she found the fight scene between Ken and Carol, she thought that was just the funniest thing. And it is pretty funny.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I thought it was funny as well. I laughed. I learned a lot. Well, I didn't learn anything. Although I do like to learn about, I just like to learn about stuff. So learning about what makes a car fast and the places you can lose weight, I was like, ooh, interesting. But anyway, I thought this movie was good. This movie is a Pizza Hut pepperoni pizza. It's reliable, it's safe, it's good, it's enjoyable, it's gonna get the job done, and you're gonna be happy that the job is done once it's done, but it's not gonna change your life. You may even at the end feel just a little bit like, oh, that was good, but what if it had been great? What if the formula had been altered in such a way, or the pepperoni was spiced with something a little bit different, or I don't know, something. But that's all secondary. The primary thing is that this is a good movie. It's enjoyable. If you haven't seen it, do so, and you'll probably like it to at least some degree. I'm gonna give it a B.
All right. Well. I think this movie is really great. I think every time I watch it, I enjoy it more. I think it is just an incredibly, incredibly well-made movie. It's very much a crowd-pleasing movie. I would agree with Elliot that if you haven't seen it, you definitely should. My fiance really enjoyed it.
And we know that she's a stupid idiot, right, Nathan?
No, she's just, like, very representative of the general audience, I would say.
Oh, my gosh. So that actually sounds extremely insulting.
Oh, no! She's just, like...
She's just, like, a mindless pleb, you know?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not walking it back.
Wow. Nathan's standing up for himself by standing up for his true love.
It's a really, really fantastic movie for all of the things that I said that it's, I think it is very much more than the sum of its parts. It's really well made, but I think beyond that, it's a really interesting examination of people who are passionate about something. And I think I just love seeing people who are revved up, pun intended.
Let's go.
For something. There's some negatives. It's not a perfect movie, but yeah, I'm going to give this like a 9.4, 9.5 out of 10.
Holy cow.
Yeah, weren't expecting that, were you, Elliot?
I was not. That seems excessive. But
I just can't.
You're right. You were right to give it that review because that score, because that was the score that the movie was for you.
Yeah.
That's the way we roll here at Magellan's at the Movies.
My recommendation, this is going to be kind of a quick one because I've already talked about it. In our episode on our favorite movies from the 90s, but that's going to be A League of Their Own, which I think is also a fantastic movie about people who love doing something and the people in charge are making doing that thing very difficult and even making it so that they have to belittle and diminish what they're doing in order to continue doing it. That as the women are it's about, if you don't know what A League of Their Own is, it's about the women baseball league that was formed while all the men were off fighting World War II. And the MLB still wanted, you know, money from audiences, so they put together a women's league. And it's about one team in that league. And it's just a really fantastic movie. I would say it's very, very similar to Ford v. Ferrari, that it's a crowd-pleasing movie that I think has a ton of heart and is about something that I find very emotionally resonant.
Well, I can give that a reluctant second. I don't like that movie very much, but I don't hate it. I probably like it less than this movie. But yeah, if you want to watch that, fine. Do it. I don't care. If you want to watch something good, however... get yourself to the nearest DVD store, go to Blockbuster, and grab Straight Outta Compton off the shelves. So we talked about this a little, well, we talked about our recommendations a little bit before the thing, the recording, and I said that Nathan and I had the same thinking, but went in very different directions. That Straight Outta Compton, if you didn't know, this is a movie about the rise of NWA, the rap group, and it is also about people, a group of people who are very passionate about something, who have not just artistic passions, but I guess like maybe political passions or just like social passions, and they want to express that artistically, and of course they have quite a lot of forces arrayed against them, from corporate politics to actual politics, law enforcement, cultural attitudes, all that kind of stuff. So this movie is a lot less sentimental, I think, than Ford v. Ferrari or A League of Their Own. It's a lot more in keeping with, it may seem a little bit strange to say, but it's a little bit more in keeping with like the tradition of historical epics in Hollywood, at least in the sense that it covers a vast, well, not vast, but a pretty long stretch of time and a lot of events in the lives of these characters. I really like this movie. My music playlists is just a who's who of classical and soundtracks, and yet every time I see this movie, I'm there bopping along to the music. It somehow gets me to enjoy rap music. So, I mean, it deserves an award just for that. But yeah, if you liked that core of passion overcoming obstacles, then I think that Straight Outta Compton is going to serve you very well. I also think that knowing that life is hard and full of disappointments, that's also going to serve you well, although for very different reasons.
Yeah, I guess I would second that recommendation. That is a pretty good movie, although I am, Pat, you know, this is why I love talking about movies, because I would say my critique of Straight Out of Compton would be that
for
it falls into biopic cliches sometimes. So I'm fascinated.
That's a review for another time.
What did Mom recommend? You said Mom had a recommendation.
Nathan, thank you for saving me from myself. You have reminded me. Yes, our mother, Terry Moggliaines, recommends Gran Turismo, if you like this movie, because it's a racing movie. It's about, you know, I said, you know, for a second time.
Yeah.
It's about scrappy underdogs overcoming all odds.
Interesting. I haven't seen that. Neither caught up on my Neil Blomkamp movies, so.
You're still waiting to watch Chappie.
I think Chappie, I've only seen District 9 or whichever, District 12?
I'm like, see, now you said that, and now I think it is District 9. It's got to be District 9.
District 9, okay.
Yes, it's District 9, and it was released in 2009. How about that?
Great. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Feel free to send us an email. Do you agree with Elliot that this movie falls into some cliches and some tropes? Or do you agree with me that this is a banger of a film and one of the best movies from a really stacked 2019 Best Picture class? Just watch all 10 of those, honestly. I think all of them are really fantastic. But anyway, send us an email if you have thoughts on that. Send us an email if you have a request for a movie you would like us to watch. We are going to, if you don't, we'll continue picking the movies, and we'll pick another movie to review for next week, so be sure to tune into that, and we hope you have a great week.